This episode is sponsored by Carve, the digital ski coach. And one of the updates I've really enjoyed this season is the addition of separate ski IQs for moguls and short turns. In the past, Carve scoring was mainly built around carving metrics, which meant everything was viewed through that lens. But Carve have gone deep on that research and completely separated what makes a great short turn or mogul turn different from a carved turn. To give you an idea of how accurate it's become, the person at the top of the Carve leaderboard right now isn't a carving specialist, it's Olympic mogul skier Matt Graham. So the best ski IQ in the world at the moment is coming from someone who lives and breathes bumps. And to be honest, my own highest ski IQ is also in the moguls, which makes sense because that's my favorite type of skiing. What's really exciting this year is the addition of turn tempo, so basically your turns per minute. It's such a simple external output that's incredibly fun to play with. So good skiing isn't just about edge similarity or parallel skis. It's about how you interact with the terrain and whether you can change your tempo on demand. So seeing numbers like my quickest tempo of 117 turns per minute in the bumps gives you something concrete to compare, refine, and work toward. I've been working with Carve since 2020, and every year I'm genuinely impressed with how much the product evolves. They keep expanding what you can measure, and they're covering more and more of the turn types that skiers actually use all over the mountain. So if you're interested in tracking not just your carving, but every turn you make on the snow, check out Carve. And a big thanks to the team for supporting this episode. Hey skiers, are you looking for a boot that provides ultimate comfort whilst also being very high performing? I certainly was, and this was one of the first boots that I got that kind of fit that category. Now my guest today on the podcast, Brent Armsbury, a master boot fitter with tons of experience, he calls these boots ultra performance boots. So it's not quite like a race plug boot, and it's not like an all mountain 130 flex high performing boot. It's sort of almost in between there. And he's seeing a resurgence in boots this year in that category. Ones that have good angles, that sort of don't stand you too upright, they help you get forward and be in a dynamic position. They're quite snug fitting and close fitting. You need to do some boot work often if you don't have that narrow sort of European type of foot. And so on this podcast, I wanted to get Brent's ideas around this. I want to have a discussion with him around this ultra performance type of boot. So if you're that person, you're that kind of really obsessed with technique, you really want to push the game, your level of skiing up, but you know, you don't want a full-on plug boot, which takes a lot of work and is heavy, but you don't want sort of one of these sort of almost like gone too towards the comfort end, not giving you enough precision and drive through the ski. Well, this podcast is for you. All right, without further ado, let's get into it with Brent Armsbury today. Hey, Brent, I've got you on today because I really want to help the viewer, a lot of the people that are on YouTube watching ski videos. They're looking a lot of the time for a performance boot that still is comfortable. And I know there's a lot of boots coming out you're aware of now that fit this bill, and you're seeing maybe a little bit of a trend. And interestingly, this trend we're seeing come back is kind of related to a conversation, the rental boot thing. So I went to Dubai just for fun, and I didn't take ski boots. I used the rental gear, and I was shocked. Made a video about it. About a lot of the angles were like just made me feel like I couldn't ski well. Give us your perspective. What that made you think about in terms of ski boots and angles and trends?
Yeah. So you know, you really got me thinking about not the rental boot per se, but like, have we possibly made, you know, have the trend of boots possibly made them too easy, like too easy to ski? Have we moved to almost to the point where it's like we've made them almost a little too like easy to be comfortable in them and easy to stand in them, as opposed to the boot challenging us a little bit more to be more on our game? And I'm not saying like the boot has to be like really brutally hard. I'm not talking about the old days of Lang Bang and people getting bloody and painful. I'm just saying that maybe we've over commercialized the boot a little bit, like just made it a little too creature comforty And now we're possibly seeing a resurgence back to boots that kind of say, let's put some more horsepower, more torque, more energy into the ski. And yeah, it might shock you a little bit at first, but you learn how to become better
Because
skiing.
you in the shop had customers coming in saying, I'd bought this boot, recommended it was the bee's knees kind of all-terrain style boot. And what sort of feedback were you hearing?
Oh yeah, like this, the start of the season, I probably have more customers who've come in and said, well, I bought this boot on a recommendation of a website or like some marketing videos. And I went and skied on it. They said they went and skied on it. And it was just like really lackluster. You know, like really didn't make the ski want to really roll over an edge. They would always say it's like maybe a little too soft feeling. Right? Like there's just way too much play, you know, going into the front of the boot. You know, they were like, it was comfortable, right? Like they always say it was comfortable, but right, like as if they had misgivings about buying a car that was like, oh, it was comfortable, but boy, it gave me no joy to drive it. Right? So like we're seeing some people. Definitely some customers who are coming in and saying, man, I bought this boot and it was comfortable, but I had no joy skiing it.
Okay. Yeah. So this is leading into where we're sort of going with this, because now what are you seeing? You're privy to like the new boots, the new models coming out. What's something, yeah, you're seeing?
So what we're seeing, or I'm seeing, at least personally, is that the start of season, we're putting more people into this new 96 millimeter lasted resurgence boot, right? And there's some manufacturers who have really kind of jumped out. Like the head Raptor WCR has always been 96, but we have more people moving to that boot because they tried like the recreational versions of other boots and went, I need more boot. And I'm like, here's more boot. And they're like, great. Dalbello DRS, like, oh, they made this 98 millimeter lasted DRS, but now they made the 140 in a 97. So closer to the 96, they're like, wait a minute, we're making that boot even more edgy, right? And then Atomic. So you got Atomic who had the Redster CS, which was a 96 millimeter lasted boot, but kind of lived in the shadow of the World Cup boot because it was a Redster. And now they made this whole new line of 96 millimeter lasted boots, like the TX and the Remedy. So you gave it a new name, a new shape. It's a 96 millimeter boot that everybody just kind of kicked to the side. And now everybody wants a 96 millimeter boot because they put some grip walk soles and some a little bit more creature comfort into it, amped up the liner. And now all of a sudden it's the star of the show. And people want it. Like it was neglect, it was an orphan. Now it's the star. And it's these are great boots. The Technica Firebird and the Kesley KX series. These boots have been around, but all of a sudden we're seeing this shift back to these more strong, powerful, torque-driven boots because I think people have tried the more hyped, free ride, easy to ski boots and just went, meh, this isn't doing it. Like, I really want a ski boot that pushes the edge.
Because I, with experience, like now into my 10th, 11th boot or something, n I know now that I, even though I have a wide foot, like over 107 millimeters wide and a 26, I still go for really narrow. So I want to bring up this conversation that. Because now it's really obvious boots that last is stated on there. I think more people are aware that it moves up and down with the sizes. But I guess can you help give some insight there that just because you might have a little bit wider of a foot or something that you don't need to shy away, but you do need to consider boot work. You know where I'm going with this. So help us out with, not scaring people, but making people aware of this fit and maybe the benefits.
Yeah, I think, when you look at the marketing and they say the last, they say it's narrow, and he's like, oh, I need to have narrow feet. But no, you don't. You don't need narrow feet. What you need is quality boot fitting to take a boot that really should be called ultra performance in its last, which is that really is close and hugs the anatomical features. And what you need is quality boot fitting to nudge and massage, this performance last around your anatomical uniqueness, right? So if you're wider, I mean you're not likely to be wide everywhere, right?
Yes.
I'm not wide everywhere on my foot. Like I have a wide forefoot, but my ankle and my heel are actually pretty tapered back. So I'm gonna be pretty happy putting my foot in a 96 boot, knowing what I'm gonna get out of it once I start pushing, nudging, massaging, grinding, punching, shaping. And it takes time. There's a bit of a relationship aspect to this, but what I'm gonna get is a boot that actually makes my skis feel like they're sharper. Like the edges are sharper, that I can really trust the rail.
So I liked how you reframed maybe the last being about the foot width, which is probably a good way to view it if you're maybe a skier that's not doing as many days and you just don't want to spend a bunch of time in the shop. You just want the boot to fit and you're not serious about improving, that's the thing. But if you're beyond that, this 96 millimeter last, I liked how you said it's like ultra performance. So you're actually choosing
Right.
the last is kind of guiding you into the kind of performance you're going to get out of a boot. So these people that they're looking at it now, maybe, well, let's go next. Can you describe the boots and the different brands in this kind of 96 mil and maybe help like the three categories, like the person that isn't a narrow foot, which of the ultra performance ones go well there, the person that's kind of in the middle, and then I'm going to say like the wide lower arch. Like I have a few like Asian friends and they have like a wider foot and it's lower, kind of low, but wide volume-ish. Like they've, yeah. So maybe guide us or talk us through what you feel is in the range currently between the brands in this category.
Well, like specifically to like brands and models, if we start with Atomic, we've got the Atomic TX and the Remedy, the Dalbello DRS, even though it's 98, it's closer to that ultra performance in the 140 to make the 97. If we go to Technica, we've got the Firebird. Right, the Firebird R. You can get the World Cup version, but like what you see on the website, the Firebird is the 96 last. Lang, they tuned their new Lang RS, which they brought out last year. It's a 98, 97, but really, it's again steers more towards that 96 style of boot with a thicker shell wall. We have the Kesley KX series that's always been really narrow and really tapered, almost to a fault, because you need a good boot fitter to make a Kesley fit, right? Like to really not want to bite you really hard, right?
Okay.
Fisher, they built a 95 last, 96 last boot a while back, the Podium GT. It went away again, kind of lived in the shadow of its World Cup brethren. And so they don't have a boot in that category right now, but I would imagine they will eventually soon because of its kind of coming back. If you've got the Doberman 5, which is a 95, 96 last, like that's a really powerful boot. And I've recommended like that boot to a lot of instructors because there's a lot of room to work with it. And you shouldn't be afraid of that boot.
Ed.
K2, they built this a new boot with double boa, right? And it's a low volume last, but they put more aggressive angles on it. It's like a comfort but aggressively, stanced boot. I don't think it really falls directly into the 96 last, but they're saying with the boa, it kind of pulls the last in. That's a little bit of controversial, but that we see this trend, like there's this separation, right? So these manufacturers are saying, look, these LV boots that we made, these 98 millimeter lasted LV boots, the comments have been, oh, the boots need to be comfortable. So they kind of just kept pushing them out and like making them more commercialized. Well, now they look more like the mid-volume boots, and they're like really, they stand up taller, they're really easy to ski. And so you kind of like these, some of these manufacturers even drop those boots. Dalbell, like, no, we don't even make the Krypton Cabrio in a 98 or 97 millimeter last anymore. So they got this big gap. So we're seeing manufacturers go, well, we've had this 96 millimeter category all along, and now we're kind of killing off some of these LV boots. So 96 is like the new LV, and yet on steroids, right? It's got more power, more performance. And we're seeing people gravitate, like, I want more performance. So what's out there? And so by just adding a little bit of creature comfort, it's kind of become alive. It's like it's resurging. Dalbello even makes grip walk soles for their DRS. Like you can just, oh, what sole do you want? Do you want an easy to walk sole that's got better grip, or do you want the racing slick racing soles? But you can take one boot and turn it into a little more SUV-ish, and you take the same boot and make it, more of a club racer just by the sole you put on it. And that wasn't available before.
Would you dare to kind of categorize, like, bunch a few of these boots for those three stereotypes or the kind of groups of foot type, so they, if they are in that, that's kind of my foot. I want to go search out a shop that at least has one of those in that range. Would you be able to help kind of, dare to do that? Like, kind of group them in what you feel would suit them better, or no?
In those type, in the 96 millimeter last, I'm very comfortable with putting a wide variety of feet in them because they do hug the foot so well. So if you're wider and lower, these boots are already lower in the instep, so I can just make width. If you're tall and narrow, I've got these really good boot boards. I can lower your foot all the way down in the boot to give you more roof height. So
That's a
instead of
really
being,
good point. That's, do you want to just explain that? Because I think some, like, explain the pain point that person might have been experiencing and then gone to a high volume boot, but lost. just explain that one, because that boot board adjustment thing, I think that's important.
So like a lot of the high performance, the 96 millimeter lasted boots have racing style boot boards. Some have a little softer, but you can grind them, right? They're thick and you can grind them down. So you can make vertical room in the boot. And not
Yes.
only that, because you got a thicker shell, I can grind and localize that high foot. Like there's a point where that high foot, that tall, narrow foot hits the top of the boot. I don't need a high volume boot to deal with that. I just need to isolate that area and recontour it, and I can assure you, you're not going to have that pain point anymore. But you get the narrowness and the performance of the anatomical fit, but just using the boot board and recontouring, you get it comfortable with all the power.
Brilliant. Okay, good. So now I sort of interrupted you there. So we're saying you're happy fitting a lot of kind of shapes of feet into these types of boots because of that. Any other reasons? Maybe expand on, like, with the boot fitter working with the types of plastics that these are made out of, does that make a difference? Do these boots often give you more modification friendly materials to work with?
They do. Like they flat out do. They're thicker shell wall. They use high level PU, polyurethane, polyether constructions. And because you have more material to work with, you can make more contours. Now, there was this drive towards these thin shell wall boots. And thin shell wall boots make, they're lighter. So there's like this attraction, like, oh, they're not as heavy. They're easy to contour, but you got this thin shell wall. But a thin shell wall has limitations. As soon as you start monkeying with these thin shell walls, they start to distort, they start to get funky on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with a boot that has kind of run away from you in terms of like the contour plus performance. They've just kind of, if you work them too hard, they give up, right? Where the thicker shell wall, like in these 96 millimeter lasts, it's like, man, it's these are box framed race car type boots, and you have so much more to work with. And so like high quality boot fitters, for sure, even within my colleagues, if I asked them, hey, what do you like to work on? I mean, what would you like to work on every day? They're going to talk about these boots. They're not, I mean, they rarely go, oh, I like a really thin shell wall boot that's just kind of just like doesn't challenge me what I'm doing. They're like, no, give me thick PU plastic, right? All day
I
long.
remember being scared when I was doing some work in a boot shop when you had like the boots and the plastic partway along would change. So you'd have like where the two plastics had to join. And if you had to punch or
Yeah.
whatever there, that was scary. This is like, that's where it's going to break. So you heat and mechanically push at it. Whereas
Right,
it was
like
just
by
solid.
injected boots. Yeah. Like the two different types of plastic joined by a physical bond, right? Yeah. They were kind of scary.
Yeah, exactly. So then expectations wise for these people going, okay, this sounds like what I want. I want more edge grip. I want more performance. Do they need to expect like a longer time process, revisits, felt differences that maybe before they've gone, no, that's not comfortable. Next boot, please.
Yeah, I mean, your expectation has to be that you're going to spend more time to get these set up. And if you expect these boots to be 100% comfortable going out the door, no. You should, when you put them on, there's going to be some clear spots that are making your brain go, get me out of here, right? But with a good boot fitter, they start nudging. It's called the low, we call it, I call it the low hanging fruit, right? So it really hurts, let's say, on the navicular, and it really hurts on your ankle bone, and it really hurts on the six toe. Like these are like searing. And then you do these three punches, and like the picture starts to clear, right? It clears, like, oh, there's relief there. And then all of a sudden, there's like these little niggly little things, like, boy, this ankle pocket, like the Achilles feels a little aggressive. And boy, my big toe could use maybe a little more room, but when I flex on it, it seems to be better. Like that's the stuff where you go, tell you what, go ski it, right? Go ski it, let the liner break in. And some of those will remain and some of them will go away. So maybe there's six little tiny things that you go, will these, go away or not? But like three of them will go away when you ski. So when you come back, you just have this little short list of three things, and maybe on each boot where a boot fitter can just take it and grind it a little bit. Just knock this down, knock a little here, knock a little there off, and then boom, those are gone. Right. So one session just to kind of get the low hanging fruit out of the way. Second session to deal with the little niggly stuff, the little details. And now you've got a boot that's 95, 96% there, right? Like little things could show up after you ski it a while, but for a third visit, but it's not a deal breaker. So,
Back to our trend of like maybe when almost too comfortable with the whole range of boots. It's almost like a red flag in this category. If it's like this, I could ski this right out of the box, is almost a little bit of
it's
a,
almost a red flag, right? Like it's like, no, if you have ultra narrow feet, it might be a slam dunker. But then when I do have ultra narrow feet in these class of boots, then I go right to like a Zip Fit liner. It's like, okay, they come with a little bit of a thin, dense liner, and if it's got enough grip, it's like, okay, sorry, we got to upgrade you right to a Zip Fit that engages that ankle even more in this frame. And it boom, it's like, wow, okay. Narrow feet, very happy now.
Would you say, I think you kind of mentioned before with the types of boots you like to work on, but a boot that has the ability to be ground, not just only punched, gives you so, like, well, one, it's quicker, right? You don't have to heat it, stretch it, wait. You can go in there, mark it. You can be very precise, can't you? So a lot of the time, these boots, if you can get that in the type of boot you're looking for, you then allow your boot fitter far more opportunity to be really precise with like snugging in and fitting these little bony patches and.
Yeah, I mean, it's quicker to an extent, but the nice thing about a grindable boot is you can go in and just take a little bit at a time. So, okay, I made a punch, but that punch, yeah, I could punch it, but like each shape is a, the shape is like, that's the shape.
Yeah.
And so you can overshoot, right? Like when you punch, you just like, oh, I tried to nudge it, but it overshot a little bit. And now you got to figure out how to get back.
Yeah.
And with grinding, it's just easier just to be like shaving, the zone. You need to expand it or make it deeper. You can do it a little bit at a time, and the boot goes on, the boot goes off, but you can just get it to right where the point where you're really satisfied with it.
Yeah.
Carving, scalping, right? As opposed to like, one spot, and then you might have overshot. Like it was just about good enough, and then now it's kind of like too open. Like there's almost too much room.
It's just so hard. I mean, you with your all your experience, that's helpful. But to stretch a boot and know the how much it's going to come back, and every plastic, even probably every year, you if they make a new boot and the plastic has changed the color, you're not 100% sure that it's going to come back the same as the old Atomic did, or if it's going to go right.
Right.
That's the tricky thing with the
Yeah.
stretching. But the
It
grinding,
is,
as you
yeah.
said, you can see if you're taking half, 1, 2 mil away, it's more the measurableness of it makes it really workable.
Yeah, and the grinding boots, you just get the shape that you want. Like if it's really oblique and really weird, like you can make that shape exactly what it looks like as a reflection of the body, as opposed to just a general area.
Yeah. So if
Yeah.
someone's moving up into this, they've, been a wide foot, so they've always bought a high volume wide boot, that foot, that kind of boot, and they go, no, I'm going to step up, and they try a pair of boots on. What would you expect their reaction or feelings to be?
If you've been in like a higher volume boot,
Yep.
well, of course you get a shock of how snug they are, right? And especially the ankle and the heel pocket and in the midfoot, like boy, this thing is really, it's a cramped cockpit.
Yeah.
Right? But you got to give it a chance. You've got to trust your boot fitter that they have the skills and the knowledge to work that boot and massage it. Because
Yeah.
trust me, just because you think you're kind of freaking out in there, like I look at people when they come in and they get in these boots and I go, look, I can make this thing pretty wide. Like I can really open this thing up. It's like I've seen people with triple E width feet and we get them into these ultra performance lasts. It's doable. It may take four sessions, but it's doable. And then these boots tend to last longer. They have
That's a
screw
really
on
good point.
hardware. Yeah.
That's a very
They
good
have,
point.
yeah. Like all the people who I set up in these boots, I may see a boot that's come back after 7 seasons of skiing and it's still intact. We put new soles on it, replace some buckles. If it hasn't cracked yet, like these boots keep going. I've seen Langs, like, that have cracked and we've repaired the cracks and they just keep going. Like the crack just kind of dies away and like they just keep going. You think these
Yeah.
boots would split in half and they go another 3 seasons with a little crack in them and they just keep going.
Yeah. I'm in that camp. I've got my podium boots dialed, and I just don't want to go. Like, it's taken a while, and but they're because they're so solid. Yeah, I broke a buckle this season, just replaced it. That was fine. I've got a zip fit in it, so that, if that eventually dies, I'll just get another one of those. But yeah, I think the longevity part of it, this investment early on, more time to get it right, you do kind of get that back a little bit later on versus the other way around.
Yeah, like these boots are like the story of the person who drives a Porsche for like a half a million miles. Yeah, they replaced a bunch of parts and but it went a half a million miles because they love the way it drives, right? Like other cars that are more creature comforty and electronic-y, you drive them 200,000 miles and you just junk them. Like you're just like, it's not even worth repairing them, right? So that's kind of like the recreational performance category is like, yeah, we can go about 150, 200,000 miles and then you just junk it, right? Where like the 96 class boots and in the World Cup boots, these are the half million milers, right? Like they can keep going. You can keep the nut as your foot changes, you just grind a little more, right? Is
This episode is sponsored by Carve, the digital ski coach. And one of the updates I've really enjoyed this season is the addition of separate ski IQs for moguls and short turns. In the past, Carve scoring was mainly built around carving metrics, which meant everything was viewed through that lens. But Carve have gone deep on that research and completely separated what makes a great short turn or mogul turn different from a carved turn. To give you an idea of how accurate it's become, the person at the top of the Carve leaderboard right now isn't a carving specialist, it's Olympic mogul skier Matt Graham. So the best ski IQ in the world at the moment is coming from someone who lives and breathes bumps. And to be honest, my own highest ski IQ is also in the moguls, which makes sense because that's my favorite type of skiing. What's really exciting this year is the addition of turn tempo, so basically your turns per minute. It's such a simple external output that's incredibly fun to play with. So good skiing isn't just about edge similarity or parallel skis. It's about how you interact with the terrain and whether you can change your tempo on demand. So seeing numbers like my quickest tempo of 117 turns per minute in the bumps gives you something concrete to compare, refine, and work toward. I've been working with Carve since 2020, and every year I'm genuinely impressed with how much the product evolves. They keep expanding what you can measure, and they're covering more and more of the turn types that skiers actually use all over the mountain. So if you're interested in tracking not just your carving, but every turn you make on the snow, check out Carve. And a big thanks to the team for supporting this episode.
Make changes as you go.
I should say too, a lot of the things in this boot, you can't feel in the shop how much of a change and effect it has on the actual snow experience, which is tricky. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And if you've not experienced that, it can be hard to like get the buy-in to spend the time, spend the money with the boot fitter, getting it right. But holy cow, yeah, when you get the snow experience with and you realize that we're not just talking crap here, like it edges better, you can go faster and you don't feel like as unstable. You just charge through chop like nothing else. I was talking to Ski Dad, and he said, you know what, I prefer my race boots in the powder to the full tilt boots, which you'd think would be the other way around, but it's because it just holds him so solid that even if he gets a bit back and wheelies, like the boot just bloop, brings him back to this athletic position and he's back on it again, which is kind of like counterintuitive.
True. It almost feels as if we went a little, like manufacturers just went a little too far with the more uprighty stance, right? Like there's like, oh, we got to ski really upright, really relaxed, because we're just skiing a bunch of double rocker stuff. And now we're like, oh, maybe did we just make it a little too easy? You know, a little too uprighty. And you know, like I like this Japanese YouTube site, like they have this image of your stance, and if your knee, right, the flexion of the knee point is not over your big toe, they're like, no. Like if you're too upright in the boot, you can't ski. You gotta challenge your forward lean a little bit. And I know some people are gonna just freak out when I say this, like, oh, wait a minute. Like I don't have great range of motion in my ankle, so I need a boot that's more upright. It's like, yeah, but we can get a little more forward. Like we can actually find a little bit more threshold. A lot of manufacturers, I feel like boots used to challenge me much harder with my low range of motion ankles. And now it's like every boot I can try on the free ride category, it's like it doesn't even matter, right? Like these all stand upright the way they shaped them. And then I get into a 96 last boot, and it's like, boom, more forward lean, but it's not that bad. It's like, yeah, I can work with this. You know, like I may have to do a little tweaking, just find the really happy point. But by playing with like ramp angles on the skis, like the delta angles, I can take a, you know, a high forward lean boot this way and just flatten out my ski. And I get the best of both worlds. More forward lean, close down the ankle a little bit, get faster reaction, but I can still feel like I'm not out of balance, right? So,
And I feel like that point of your knee just sitting a bit over your toe, I think you'd have to be like really very, very bad ankle flex to not be able to like be like there, like that, beyond that, sure. But I think even with the what, like a 16 degree forward lean, I think there would be a fair amount of people still in the like I've got limited range. Like even my wife, she's crap range of ankle motion. But yeah, she's in a boot that she noticed when it went upright. She's like, I can't get forward, so we had to. Yeah, she's like, I can't ski the as well as I can. We're in Japan, and it's like, oh no.
Yeah, it's almost like the industry kind of snuck it, like they keep sneaking towards these shapes that got us more and more upright. And it almost feels like we just went a little too far. And now these 96 clacks boots, you can clearly see them, they're coming back. They're like, we need to get more flexion.
So I'm going to re-emphasize the point of down this road, you're going to need to invest a little bit more money and a little bit more time to get the good outcome. And you're going to need to develop a good relationship with your boot fitter because there is a bit more work done. You unless you're the really there are people that are lucky, bam, into the Doberman. Yep, this is good. Little grind here, and then I'm happy. But that's probably in your experience, would you say that's definitely on the less end? Like,
Yeah, that's a smaller percentile.
So you got to be prepared for that. I just want to mention that now. So expectations, I think, I think it's brilliant if we can help people realize what it is, and then they know the time that's going to be spent doing it to get that kind of fit. So anything more on that, you being at the boot fitter end, me being someone that's coming in and saying, make this work for me. Any more advice or words for the listener looking for the boot, coming to their boot fitter? Like maybe even are they going to be, because REI, I don't want to, like they're not, those kind of places are probably not going to be able to fit this type of boot. They probably won't even carry the range. But any like little hints that a shop, because a lot of your shop is awesome, people know of it, people will recommend it, but what if you don't know? Are there like signs like, oh, they'll have race boots on the wall, or you'll see the workshop out the back and there'll be like someone grinding a boot or
I mean, those level boots do take the better, they'd require the better boot fitter in the store, right? I mean, if you're going to buy into this and invest in this, you definitely want to go, okay, who's the most experienced boot fitter in the store that handles these boots? They may say, yeah, that person's pretty booked out. There's one person who just kind of really specializes in these. It's worth the wait, right? It's worth being patient and having that person with the most amount of experience set those boots up for you. And then realizing it's not a rush in, rush out situation. Like you're better off, like, this is my day. So when I'm going to book in, it might be just a 2-hour appointment. But like if you come in to me and you say, okay, it's a 2-hour appointment, and I know that you're coming and we got to get that boot done that day, I'm not going to just kick you out at 2 hours. It's like, okay, we just burned up the 2 hours, we got it, but go have lunch. I'm going to keep working. You went had lunch at 1:30, and then you come back at 3, and I got a bunch more work done. I'll good fitters will stick with it to the end of the day. You just hang around, hand them the boot, say a little bit more. They might be working with another customer, but it's easy for us to just go back and go, okay, a little more here, a little more there, a little this. We just kind of keep slipping all that in. You get it done in a day. You may live in that shop for the whole day, but you'll walk out with a pair of boots that are, the low-hanging fruit is gone. They're ready to ski. The alignment is, tracked and ready, and you've got a plan of action, right? So it's not going to be, don't go in there like, oh, in 90 minutes, I'm going to have a pair of these boots dialed. No. Just expect to live there for a day, right?
I think I would
Going in
say
and out. Yeah.
some advice probably for maybe the instructors out there, me coming from that background, who were often maybe, because you're in the industry expecting maybe a bit of a discount or that sort of thing. I would just say now, being older and experienced, I realize the costs of running a business, the costs of staff these days, the margins in equipment and everything. I think the best thing you can do is just suck it up and realize that it's not like you're going to have to get this done every single day or every week once it's right. But I think be ready to pay for the work that goes into molding this type of boot into a boot that will help you ski better. So I just want to mention that, because I just don't, I feel that, there's even changed with the times. It used to be you buy a boot and like all the boot fitting was free. And I don't know really many shops that do that anymore,
Yeah,
because it's just, there's
that's
just,
not
yeah,
happening.
you can't make a living out of it. You cannot do that.
No, you can't. The industry's gotten much more expensive, in terms of the overhead costs, the rents, the taxes, everything, your staff, right? Just the other peripheral staff there, they're not working at minimum wage anymore, right? So and they're supporting the boot, they're part of the support for the lead boot fitter, right? Because they're taking care of all the tourists and the people who just want nice comfy fits. But you have to pay them a livable wage, these days, and they have to make a decent living. And especially when most of these fitters are now congregating in ski areas, which have some of the highest costs of living in the nation. Right. Yeah. So the days of like when I started working in the industry, minimum wage was, I was more than happy to take minimum wage because it was like a lifestyle job. And the life around me wasn't that expensive. So now it, you can't, you just, that's, it doesn't exist anymore. It's no longer people working for lower wages because they're in the industry for the fun. They actually have to make enough. So, okay, so just to answer your question a little more direct. So you're an instructor, you buy a boot like this on Proform. No, you're not going to be able to go in and pay a deducted labor rate because you're an instructor. No, you're going to pay the brain surgeon rate, right? The best brain surgeon out there is not going to be an inexpensive doctor. So it's the same thing. The best boot fitters don't work for low rates. They
And I
work
just think that's
for,
really
yeah.
important. I think that's really important
Yeah.
to mention, because I mean, you and I both wish it could be really a lot cheaper, but it's just not the way. And I think if you just have that understanding, just the world is more expensive now, and it's not the way maybe it used to be in the past. Just accept it, and I'm sure you'll be able to get around it, and it's not an ongoing weekly, monthly cost you're paying for someone's expertise to also be in the industry that the ski instructor is in, loving it for the same reasons. You know what I mean? Like,
So just like a quick comparison, I found out my mechanic for my car, that shop is $210 an hour. That's the labor rate. Okay. So yeah, like and my hourly rate is below that.
You've got
So
in this in a different skill like area, boots, mechanical, like same amount of experience and level there going on. But yeah, so anyway, I think that was an important thing to bring up again with the expectations thing.
Sure, but it's
Hey,
worth it, right?
yeah.
These boots, these are the Porsche slash Ferrari, Lamborghini-ish, Mercedes S classy boots out there, right? So
Yep.
these boots are really quite hot ship, powerful boots.
They will make your
So
skiing better. Like
yeah, so
you will be able to ski faster, better in them. Like they're, yeah, if that's what you're after,
it's worth it,
you'll get it
right?
out of
It's
them.
worth it. Yeah, you're going to get your money back. Trust me, with big smiles and ski performance and hooking up the edge and railing the ski that you may have never experienced before,
That's right. There's a
and have your
reason.
confidence.
Yeah, you see all
Yeah.
these top skiers are in that kind of a boot doing what they're doing. Part of it is what that equipment allows them to do, and yeah, get their skill level up. I mean, sure, they can go back down, but to get up to that point, you need something that supports you up to that point to feel the skills, the power, the speed, the time and the reaction forces. You kind of can't really get up there in a mushy thing. You just don't. You just you, your brain won't let you do it. It's too kind of risky. It senses, nah, this is no good. The ski doesn't react in a certain way. So even if they are in a like slightly dialed down, I guarantee they've probably been beforehand, racing to a high level in a very stiff boot, learning to feel these things to then be able to
Yeah.
like back it off. Would you agree with
And
that?
yes, I would agree with that. And I think an important point I'd like to make is that we're not talking about plug boots. Okay. That we're not talking about the 92 millimeter lasted thin leatherish liner boot. We're talking about the 96, which shares a lot of the performance of the plug boot. But the liners are plusher. They're built for all day. They can take the 8 hour session, not the 2 hour session. And the angles are similar, but they're just not quite as de they're demanding, but they're just not quite as Formula One, right? So
Because you don't really want to
more
be
of a yeah,
feeling every
yeah.
single bump which those boots will
Yeah.
give you. It's not,
Right.
you because
You
you're not
know,
looking for split seconds.
and I had a client today who came in with his full World Cup Dobermans, and he's like, "Yeah, I like the way they ski, but man, I want a boot." Like he wanted a boot that could just go a little bit more off-piste, right? Like a little more bang it up, but yet still carve it hard. And that's where we fell into a 96 class boot because he could feel that it still had that energy, but it just wasn't going to be brutal. Like a World Cup boot, right? Like he just needed something more in just a touch toned down, yet still all the performance when he wanted to push it hard.
I think,
Just a thin wafer, not quite so harsh, right?
yeah, that's right. So I think that's good. We've kind of now placed this in a spectrum. There is something, the plug boot. If you're first hearing about this, is like what the World Cup, the high-end ski races, that's what they're in. We're talking about coming down there a little bit, but not the all mountain type boot. I think I
Yeah.
hope it catches on. I think it's a good term, the ultra performance boot, like this category instead of it being a last thing. Because
Yeah.
yeah, I just don't think that gives the right idea. It's what are you trying to do with the boot, not what is your foot like. That should dictate like where your choice goes.
Yeah. Yeah, it shouldn't. It's like, just because you run around in Hokas and Ultras, like these wider toe box shoes, a lot more room, doesn't mean that, oh my gosh, I can't be in a narrow profile boot. It's
That's
just, it's a
right.
misnomer. It's no, it's an ultra performance creature, not just strictly narrow.
Hey, I wanted to finish this conversation up. I think this has been really good. I've enjoyed it. But actually, with a safety thing, slightly related, rip walk soles, non-grip walk bindings. I feel that there hasn't been enough information out there for the general public because we're in this kind of transition period where you like grip walk soles and bindings that have grip walk and non-grip walk compatibility are available. And I didn't know that that was a problem. And I've seen people injured really badly in a grip walk boot and a regular binding, and it didn't release properly. And so I want to take this chance now for you to, well, maybe can you explain, explain the two, and and that you have to get this combination right, or you're at risk.
Yeah, a lot of it, we're 6 years into this transition from grip walk, away from the standard DIN, we call the DIN 5355 sole, which is still the sole on plug race boots. And many of these 96 boots still use that sole. But with now sort of these grip walk 96 boots, you have to have a grip walk compatible binding. And a lot of these bindings are more recent. Like the question I always ask is, how old are your skis? And if you hesitate and you go, oh, they're like 5 or 6 years old, I'm like, you
They're
need
not
a
going to
new
be grip
binding.
walk compatible.
They're likely or not. And like the Look Pivot, they didn't even become grip walk compatible until about 2 or 3 seasons ago. Marker was the first. Like 6 year old markers will be grip walk compatible, and then everybody kind of slowly moved in the grip walk direction. Tyrolli was the next, and Salomon was a bit of a holdout, and Look was definitely a holdout. But like, you got to have a grip walk compatible binding if you have a grip walk
Boot,
sole boot.
sole, yeah, sole, sorry.
Some of the boots you can retrofit, like some of them you can go back to the standard sole, but you need to be asking these questions. Like, one, how are my bindings grip walk compatible? If they're not, am I going to be buying a grip walk level type boot? And you got to make sure that they interface. You got to make sure.
Because I had some real trouble. Archie had a grip walk sole boot, which has been great. Awesome, because he doesn't, it's safer walking around the car park and at the end of the day, and easier to walk in. But then he's now ski racing a little higher level, and I'm a marketplace. I'm like, I just want to get a secondhand pair of skis. I don't want to pay $1,000. Find some. None of them grip walk compatible. So I'm stuffed. So I actually ended up having to get another pair of little junior boots that had a DIN norm sole. I mean, actually, a Fisher eventually sent a replacement normal sole for his grip walk ones, which but it was too late. So I actually had to, before this state competition, go and buy a whole new pair of boots so I could use these secondhand race skis, because it was cheaper to do that combo than get a. Because the race skis don't really come with a grip walk compatible binding it most of the time, because they're expecting you to be in a flat soled boot.
But manufacturers are now making race style grip walk compatible bindings.
Yes,
But
thank God.
you gotta ask. You gotta like, if I have, let's say, the Atomic Remedy boot that comes with a grip walk sole, is this DIN 5 to 16 binding grip walk compatible? Right? So I can use this high level binding that has the switch that can go from DIN, standard DIN to the new grip walk DIN, but they are making them now, right? But you can't take it for granted, right? You just you have to ask and look at the tech specs and ask the store person or especially the binding mounter, who knows more about the bindings than anybody else, and be like, "Yep, that's compatible. It's going to work great."
I'm glad I had a oh, you know him, Chris, who moved to see Washington State. He came and got some boots from you. Anyway, he had a pair of the Fisher Curve, old Curve ones, and he was getting tuned, and the shop guy said, "Hey, like, what boots are you going to be using with these?" And so he messaged me and he said, "I've been told, do I need new bindings for these?" Now he's in the Lang Shadow, and which has got a grip walk sole, and I'm like, "Don't ski in those in that binding with that boot." And actually, that's what I wanted to ask you. What, like, do you know how, like, is it more likely that that's not going to release, or is it going to pre-release, or are you not sure?
It's not going to release at the level that it's set at.
Okay.
It's going to likely jam up.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. That's what happened with this little this kid that I was keying with. I saw it from behind, 2 meters away, following them down, a little twisting fall, and I just
Yeah.
watched the ski and the knee go together and then finally release, but it was too late.
Yeah.
And you know, the binding was at like 1.25.
Right.
Like right, the super low din. Just didn't
Yeah,
release, so please.
the grip walk AFD has to be compatible with grip walk, because the AFDs don't line up on a standard sole and a grip walk sole. They don't line up exactly. So that AFD pad has to line up with the angle of the grip walk so that it releases clean. Yeah.
Awesome. Anyway, I've been meaning to like somehow get that out. And hopefully more the confidence, because once it starts spreading and even friends going, hey, what are you doing with that binding and those boots? You got these brand new cool boots with grip walk, but you're riding the 8-year-old ski. That's dangerous. Don't do that. And because the trick is you're like, great,
Yeah.
I've got this new ski. Oh, suddenly a powder day, like a 1-in-a-month powder day, because I'm out east. I'll take my old mantras out. You're in your new boot and the old binding.
No.
Bad, bad, bad things can happen.
Yeah, it's a bad deal. And if you have an old vintage style ski, you're gonna have to replace the binding on it. If you want to keep that old 10-year-old pair that you're still in love with, I hate to break it to you, you're going to have to update the binding on it to a grip walk compatible with your new grip walk sole boot.
Or just be aware of it and maybe. Yeah, swap out the soles. I mean, that's going to be a bit of a pain. And what if you forget? Great. Hey, Brent, thanks so much for your time again.
No problem. Thank you. I mean, it's always fun to chat.
It is.
So.
Yeah, I think we get across some good conversations, and I think you help me think about things more. And I like that you're getting stimulated with some of the topics I'm bringing up. So yeah, just. It's great, especially this early season point where people are just waiting for the snow, thinking about new gear. I hope some people have got some good advice here, and yeah, we can help them out, and everyone can ski better at the end of the day.
Yeah, me too. And I'm still answering emails. If you with my contact info, it takes me a little longer now, right? We're starting to ramp up pretty heavy. I don't always can get to the email like in first couple of days. It might take 72 hours or more. But yeah, I'm still happy to answer people questions and
You're in the same shop. So is it so Brent's in Park City, for those who don't know.
Yeah,
I've
it's
had
Park City Ski Boot. Yeah.
Park City Ski Boot in Park City, Utah. I've had friends, clients fly from Europe even to come and see Brent all over America as well. So yeah, if you're liking what you're hearing, now's probably the time, because yeah, once winter hits, it gets a little crazy. And that was the only other thing I was going to say. Like, great time. We've mentioned before in podcasts, get your boots fit, like even in the summertime, like in the off season,
Yeah,
best
absolutely. What
time.
like I fire up with the gear like really ready to rock and roll like August 15th,
There we go.
right? And by September, I'm rocking and rolling. Like the racers, the hardcores, instructors, they know.
Get
And
in.
right now, like right up until Thanksgiving, there's still like this latitude to gear up. But we have an opening date right around Thanksgiving, just like before Thanksgiving. And as soon as there's a white ribbon of death, it's like the floodgates just pour wide open. And I get pretty busy, like just flat out.
Excellent.
So,
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it.
yeah.
Brent, thanks so much for your time. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Tom.
So there you go, another episode of the Big Picture Skiing Podcast done, and another one on boots with Brent. So thanks, Brent, for your expertise and wealth of knowledge. Hey, just a PS from me, if you haven't checked out Big Picture Skiing in this season, you really want to improve, I highly recommend you go and check it out. My goal is to make the best learning platform out there, an ultimate go-to resource for learning anything. So, you know, not for beginners, but if you're beyond that, intermediate and aspiring, you know, even high-level instructors I have on there saying they're getting great results. So my promise to you is you'll get some great value, you'll learn some things, and you'll keep improving. So yeah, go there and please check it out. All right, until next time, see you later. This episode is brought to you by Carve, the digital ski coach. Now, one of the features I've had the most fun with all time is simply the fact that Carve tracks every single turn you make. I treat it a bit like Strava, so at the end of the day, it tells me exactly how many turns I've done, and those numbers keep adding up across the season. So last season in Australia, I had a few days where I was doing nearly 2,500 turns and my legs were tired, but it was really cool to try and have that number there motivating me. And I'm quietly working my way towards my 1 millionth turn with Carve. So the other metrics I've been diving into lately, and these are new for this season, are very unique. And these are turn corridor and turn radius. And I don't see many skiers using them, but they tell you a lot about the shape and flow of your skiing. So the turn corridor shows you how far you're traveling across the hill, or the time almost between apex to apex, and how long you're taking to transition. While the turn radius measures the actual arc you create once you start the turn. So these can be different. You can have like a very wide corridor, say 18 meters, but a lower turn radius, or the other way around. So when you compare the two, it opens up a whole world of experimentation, and it would be a bit like a race coach will set different types of race courses to influence a racer or skier to change the timing and mix it up. So I encourage you to look into this if you've got Carve and play with it and see if you can manipulate it, because it's only going to improve your versatility. So I keep my Carve on my boots every single day, because you never know when like a change in technique or a new ski resort or skis will show up in the numbers. And it's great at the end of the day being able to check that, or even after the fact. And I'm really looking forward to the day I open the app and I see turn number 1 million. So if you want to explore your skiing in a completely different way, check out Carve, the digital ski coach. And thank you, team, for sponsoring this episode.